Vice President Cheney and Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz are often cited in news columns as the intellectual authors of the Bush administration's foreign policy. Who do they read inside? As U.S. and British soldiers moved into Iraq last March, Vice President Cheney addressed the American Society of Newspaper Editors.
Let me quote the military historian Victor Davis Hanson, writing several days ago. By any fair standard of even the most dazzling charges in military history, the Germans in the Ardennes in the spring of 1940, or Patton's Romp in July of 1944, the present race to Baghdad
is unprecedented in its speed and daring and in the lightness of its casualties.
And that is Victor Davis Hanson, speaking from the studios of member station KVPR in Fresno, California. Mr. Hanson is actually a professor of classical history, Greek, and Latin at Cal State Fresno. But in recent years, his vivid and philosophic meditations on military history, including Carnage and Culture and Ripples of Battle, have become best-selling books. He's now writing a book on the Peloponnesian Wars. Professor Hanson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been identified in some of the profiles that have appeared about you recently as likening U.S. foreign policy to a struggle between Athens and Sparta.
Well, as long as we realize that we don't live in the 5th century B.C., there are some parallels that we're a more liberal, cosmopolitan, and dynamic society at war with people who look toward the past rather than the future.
Take us to school a little bit. Who do you see as Athens and who do you see as Sparta? And try and create some of that reasoning for us.
Well, the Spartans were a reactionary, insular, rural society whose strength was in discipline and allegiance to the past. And Athens was obviously a maritime radical democracy who each year of its existence in the latter 4th century became more liberal, more dynamic, in some ways more reckless and more confident. And so I'm not sure that all of the parallels people would approve of, but there's much to see in America and Athens and in a way that Sparta tends to represent societies that are their antitheses.
In your book Carnage and Culture, which came out, I guess, almost 3 years ago, you detailed how you believe that a Western society steeped in democracy and dissent was sometimes against all expectation, to your mind, more effective at waging war than totalitarian states in which the population could be forced, sometimes at the point of a gun, to wage war.
There's a couple of reasons why that's true. One, of course, is that the more minds you have operating, the better it is. When you welcome in everybody into the debate, you get different points of view, different historical contexts that you otherwise would not. But more importantly, I think, even is that when you have a majority who's on record of supporting a war, they really have no redress. They have no opportunity to say he did it, or the king, or the monarch, or the tyrant. This was his war. The democracies, as we see way back to ancient Athens, once they mobilize for war and it's clear they've had a debate and a consensus, then they have nobody to blame but themselves. And they're slow to wrath and they're slow to mobilize, but once they have their heart into it and they're on record that it's in their collective interest, they make war like no other society.
But let me ask you irresistibly, I think, with the example at hand of the recent war in Iraq, there are certainly people who believe that their initial support for the war was misinformed. Did the administration, in your judgment, Professor Hanson, make an error in putting the imminent threat of weapons of mass destruction so prominent in their argument?
I think they did. I don't think it was a fatal error, but I do think that they could have made a more comprehensive case by saying that the world as it exists after 9/11, when you have autocrats who have engaged not only in attacking their neighbors but engineering genocide, and we're already, this is an important point, we're already occupying 2/3 of a sovereign nation's airspace because they were in violation with a sort of a bellum interruptum, a war that never really ended in 1991. That these were legitimate reasons, in addition to his history with weapons of mass destruction. But when you privilege one particular casus belli, I think then you either win or lose, depending on how that turns out after the war.
You've written, Professor Hanson, that you see events as we maybe have become aware of them as Americans after September 11, 2001, as an unfolding war, a conflict between, and I hope I don't misstate this, civilizations.
I do. I think that what we're seeing now is that there are people in the world who are gradually accepting that a collage of values from capitalism to consensuality to freedom to secularism to tolerance, that this gives the individual the greatest amount of leisure, security, freedom, And whether it's Japan or what we see in China or India, the world was moving toward this consensus. And the Middle East, unfortunately, for one reason or the other, partly we're to blame, partly that it was self-induced misery, has not participated in this great evolution, that they cannot produce goods and services and freedom to the individual, and they channel that misery through state-supported media that target mostly the United States and also Jews in general or Israel, and that we had to address that. And I don't understand why very liberal people, when they look at Al-Qaeda or when they look at the fundamentalist or they look at some of the people who are promulgating autocratic government, that they don't understand that everything that we hold dear in the United States is exactly what these people do not want.
May I ask Professor Hansen, did someone like Vice President Cheney read you and draw his own conclusions, or may I ask without violating any confidences, do people in the administration call you?
I've had people call me in the administration, but at a very low level. I mean, people in the Pentagon, people in the armed forces, people on staffs of particular people. But while I've talked to the president and the vice president, it's only been, I would call it, ceremonial occasions. I was impressed on both occasions when I've met them, though, that they were very interested in the degree to which history offered parallels, offered support, and even offered pessimism about what they were undertaking. So I found them reflective people, but I'm not in constant or even occasional contact with the highest people in the administration.
May I ask, Professor, are there people who've ever said to you in recent years, as your books in military history have become so well known, Professor Hansen, you're such a good classic scholar and historian of the Greeks and the Romans. I just wish you wouldn't go much past the 5th century.
It happens all the time, and it's a result of a variety of reasons. One is, of course, the nature of academic cultures to specialize, and you can be safe in a smaller area. The other is that whether we like it or not, the broader the topic you write about, the more people are going to read, and that's not necessarily good for your peers. And then I'd be less than candid. I think also that although I'm a Democrat, a lot of the things that I've written are conservative, and I think there's less tolerance for an academic in the academy to be more conservative. And so people who would criticize me for, quote, being political and writing on contemporary affairs really are not as critical as people, I think, on the left sometimes. So it's a good question I encounter it all the time.
Professor Hansen, nice talking to you.
I appreciate it. It was very nice of you to have me on.
Classics professor and military historian Victor Davis Hansen speaking with us from Fresno, California.